Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
It waits at the farthest reaches of the galaxy. It waits for an alien fortune hunter and a Starfleet officer to face their greatest challenge. But most of all, it waits for you. Star Trek Deep Space Nine. In January, the wait will be over.
Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. And joining me, I have my Deep Space Nine discussion panel. First up is Mr. Richard Sabo. How's it going, Richard?
Not too bad. Glad to be back. Hopefully your night's going well.
Yep, so far so good. So far so good. And next up is Mr. Curtis Holloway. How's it going, Curtis?
It's going just fantastic, buddy.
Excellent. And last but not least, we have Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Hey, guys. Doing all right.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So, last episode that we recorded, we went over season one. And now we're rolling into season two. So this is season two of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And this season took place in the 1993-94 television season. Okay, so the first episode is episode of the entire series. It's episode 21, and it is called The Homecoming. And the star date is 47101.2. Directed by Winrich Kolbe, story by Jerry Taylor and Ira Stephen Bear, teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear. So it's kind of interesting that Jerry Taylor contributed to this. And the original air date was September 26, 1993. Quark gives Kira a Bajoran earring he claims was sent as a message from a Cardassian mining planet. And this is the first of a three-part episode. Which to this point had not been done, unless you include Best of Both Worlds and Family. That was kind of like a three episode arc, but
it definitely wasn't a direct three episode.
No,
continuation. And this definitely, in my opinion, a really well done, arc. I enjoyed it.
And yeah, like Family, like originally, like we're talking Next Generation now, but Family, originally they weren't even going to do that episode. They really had to fight for it. Because from what I understood, Roddenberry and Berman just wanted to, go to the next episode. And the writers were like, no, Picard has to deal with what happened to him. So I'm glad that they did do that episode, but you're right, Richard. It wasn't like part three of Best of Both Worlds. It was a separate episode. But even though these ones have different episode titles, it is a three-part story here, and I really liked this three-parter to open up the season. It was really cool. So getting into a little bit more about the plot, so Quark gives her the earring, and it's from Lee Nollis, a Bajoran war hero long thought dead. So Kira goes to Cardassia 4 and discovers a labor camp with about a dozen Bajorans there, with O'Brien. They manage to get Lee Nollis. And then we learn at the end of the episode, because Lee has this, he's this war hero, I forget how the story went exactly.
Lee Nollis was meant to be an amazing war hero, but it turns out the story that made him more or less famous was heavily exaggerated, whereas the accepted version is that he fought a massive Cardassian hand-to-hand combat, took him out. In reality, he struggled a little bit, and he basically just got him by accident. Kind of like how Quark killed the Klingon by accident.
Yeah.
He was actually unclothed, naked, trying to take a bath.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess it's one of those things that happens. Things get exaggerated during war times. I really like that actor. His name's Richard Beamer as Leon Hollis. He was, oh, I can't remember the name of his character, but he was on Twin Peaks.
Okay.
He was the rich guy that owned the lodge at Twin Peaks. He plays a really good goofy type of character, because like his character in Twin Peaks has like a mental breakdown. But for this three-parter, he plays it way more serious, and he does a good job. I thought he did a good job. And also we get Frank Langella as Minister Jaro making his appearance. I should also note that Gal Dukat was on this episode as well, and Rom as portrayed by Max Grunjack. But Frank Langella, for me, is best known as playing Skeletor on the original Masters of the Universe movie.
Mm. And honestly, the guy who plays Minister Jaro, he gives me a very Christopher Lee kind of vibe.
Yes.
And he's just fantastic actor. He was also in Junior, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, played sort of that like antagonist kind of guy, and great actor. Love him.
Yeah, and he plays Jim Carrey's father on that TV show that Jim Carrey's doing right now. I can't remember what it's... I think it's called Kidding. And he plays, Jim Carrey's dad. And he's really good in that one, too. Like, he really is a great actor. But, all right, for episode 2, and it's episode 22 of the series, it's called The Circle. And the star date is 47125.7, directed by Corey Allen, written by Peter Allen Fields. Oh, before we move on, I just wanted to quickly say, when I said that it was interesting that Jeri Taylor helped write this episode, she didn't actually work on Deep Space Nine. She was for season, like when Deep Space Nine was taking place during season 2, season 7 of TNG was taking place at the same time. And Jeri Taylor was the showrunner of TNG, while Michael Piller was the showrunner of Deep Space Nine during that time. So it was kind of interesting that she would jump over to the Deep Space Nine writing room to lend a hand, I guess. But anyway, the original air date for The Circle was October 3rd, 1993. The Circle attempts to topple the Bajoran government, but there is more to the situation than meets the eye. And again, this is part 2 of 3. And we should say, in the previous episode, The Circle was doing graffiti on the station, and we kind of heard about them for the first time. And then this is the episode where we actually get to see them. We learn that Minister Jaro is the Circle. He's the one that's organizing all of this as a plot to take over the Bajoran government and at the same time get rid of the Federation, because he doesn't want the Federation there anymore. And I should also point out the previous episode, episode 1, ended with Major Kira getting transferred back to Bajor with Leon Hollis as, oh, what was his rank again?
I believe it was the Autark or something. That
Mavark.
Navark.
Yes, yeah. Navark.
Yeah, they created.
Honestly, I never liked that, and I just thought it was, I thought, like,
yeah.
I guess to clarify, I didn't like it as me personally. It was a good part of the episode, but I just don't like that they had to transfer Kira for no reason just to institute this rank that barely existed.
Well, they created this rank because I guess Leon Hollis, he was so revered by the Bajorans that no rank was good enough. Like they had to create one for him. But we learn in this episode the reason why they did that was because Minister Jaro, as head of the Circle, wanted Leon Hollis away from Bajor, so he could do what he needed to do, because he really thought that Leon Hollis, you know, could rally the people and stop any coup that he was planning, right? So it was better to ship him away and get Kira back, because at least he could, you know, control Kira. Like, she isn't as much of a strategic threat to his plan.
Did we find out by episode 2, the Circle, that he wasn't working alone yet, or is that in the next one? Because he was scheming with Kai Winn as well.
Yeah, it was. I don't think it was this episode. Like, you did, I think you did see them talking, but I don't think it was you. There was no, because it was implied, I think, in the next episode that they are in a relationship, and that and that he was gonna, you know, basically make him. Make her the Kai if she supported him. But it's also, we also learn in this episode that the Circle is actually getting supplied by the Cardassians. That this is
via the Lesseppians.
Yeah, via the Lesseppians. That this is all a convoluted plot by the Cardassians for the Bajorans, for the Circle to overthrow their government. So they will kick the Federation out, so the Cardassians will come in. And Minister Jaro doesn't know this. Like, he thinks he's, you know, really taking Smart. Back, yeah, taking back Bajor for the Bajorans. He's not a collaborator with the Cardassians at all.
No, he's just what in modern parlance would be called a useful idiot.
Yes, yes.
Indeed.
At the end of the episode, Jaro goes to Vedic Wynn seeking her support, a spiritual leader, to organize in order to legitimize his coup. Several Bajoran assault vessels approach Deep Space Nine, ordering all non-Bajorans to evacuate. Sisko seeks Starfleet's help, but his superiors order him to comply with the evacuation order. Regardless, Sisko and his crew refuse to give up without a fight. And that's how the episode ends. Oh, and Kira had been kidnapped by the Circle, and she was rescued, and now she's back on Deep Space Nine at this moment.
And you know that it's just a bait and switch, because Sisko ain't going out without a fight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that was the feeling I got the first time I saw that episode, and I'm like, I don't know about that. I'm pretty sure something's going to happen.
Yep. So we move into episode 23, third of the season, and it's called The Siege. And the star date is 47143.9. Again, directed by Winrick Colby, who directed the first episode of the season. And this was written by Michael Piller. And as soon as I seen this come on the screen, I was super excited. Because Michael Piller, as we know, wrote Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and 2. So he can write a good action show. And the original air date was October 10th, 1993. Sisko and Lee Nollis help stop Deep Space Nine from being commandeered by the Bajorans, while Kira and Dax try to put an end to the Circle by presenting evidence that Minister Jaro is being backed by the Cardassians. And this is Part 3 of 3. So this was kind of neat on a few different levels. So again, we had Frank Langella come back. We had Kai Winn, played by Louise Fletcher. Steven Weber played Colonel Day. For those who don't know, Steven Weber is an actor, a comedian. For me, best known as, I can't remember his name of his character, but he was on the TV series Wings, the comedy series. And he's apparently a huge Star Trek fan. He's done a number of other guest appearances, and he's been on different movies and so on and so forth. But yeah, I remember at the time, because when Deep Space Nine was being filmed, Wings was also being filmed on the Paramount lot. And I guess Steven Weber used to go over to the Star Trek sets frequently just to check things out and hang out, because he was such a big fan. And he was such a fan that they actually wrote this part for him. So that was pretty cool. Another note is Stephen Mott as General Krim, the Bajoran commander. For those who don't know, he was actually, back in 1987 or 86, when they were casting for Captain Picard for Star Trek The Next Generation, he was actually one of the guys that was on the short list. So the guy who played General Krim in this episode was actually possibly in the running to be Captain Picard.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Imagine how different that would have been. Wow.
Well, not just that, and... I was just going to add to the mind-blowingness of this. Jeffrey Combs, Wayun, was also considered for the role of Riker back in the early stages of TNG.
Wow.
Do you remember the Traveler played by Eric Menyuk?
Yep.
He was also on the short list to play Data as well.
Yep.
Can you imagine how different that would have been as opposed to Brent Spiner?
And not just that, I got another one to add to this. Russ was considered for Geordi LaForge.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not entirely surprising, though.
It's not surprising, but just you think all these alternate, you know, actors from Star Trek playing all these characters, like, you know, it's very interesting.
You know, Jeffrey Combs is easily my favorite Star Trek actor. I am so glad he didn't end up doing anything other than exactly what he did, because he was so goddamn perfect at all of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right? Every single character he played. And just as one final thing, one of the original names for Picard was going to be Julian Picard as opposed to Jean-Luc Picard.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. That's kind of cool.
Can you imagine that?
Weird.
Yep.
So would we have had, like, Jean-Luc Bashir in Deep Space Nine then?
Possibly.
Maybe.
I also want to say that I hate Colonel Day. The guy who played him well.
Oh, yeah.
But in the same vein that Louise Fletcher plays Kai Winn, I don't like him because of how well he played that character as basically, I want to say, you know, a turncoat type of, like, non-trustworthy, non-reliable officer. Mm-hmm. He bugged the heck out of me.
Oh, yeah, and that's the guy I said was the uber Star Trek fan, so it was really cool to see him play such a dark character. Yeah, this is easily one of my favorite episodes of Season 2. I loved the action. I loved, you know, that, you know, Sisko and the Federation guys with Lee Nollis are trying to... prevent, you know, the Deep Space Nine from being overtaken. You know, they're kind of fighting a little guerrilla war on the ship, or sorry, on the station. I love the fact that Quark was selling seats, and Rom sold his seat.
And he overbooked the shuttles, yeah, of course.
So now he has to stay behind with all his gold-pressed latinum. That was fantastic. You know, I loved, you know, the air, like, the aerial space, you know, atmospheric space fighting with the Bajoran ships with Kira and Dax. And
yeah, the whole Kira and Dax subplot I thought was fantastic. They just went and found just an old sub-impulse raider, and they just kicked it, and I thought that was pretty cool, to be honest.
Is that the episode with the Polaku?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
I would eat one of those things.
Hell yeah, I would. And a quick side note, General Krim, I really liked that character. It was very, very intelligent, you know, kind of an older, wiser military general, and I just thought he was done well, just as a quick note.
Yeah, I always kind of wish they would have brought him back at some point, or Colonel Day, you know, later on in the series. Like, I was hoping they would, you know, we'd play into that a little bit.
Perhaps as like a Maquis or something to that effect, because he would have been court-martialed and likely dishonorably discharged from the militia, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'd imagine. But, I mean, like, Krim, like, he actually did the right thing. Like, when he found out that the Cardassians were behind everything, like, he was like, yep, we're done. So he, you know, like, yeah, he still would have been court-martialed, but yeah, like... It would have been great to see him come back, and we got to see Vedic Barayal again. He came, I think this was his second. No, he was in the last episode, episode 2 of this season, and then he was in this episode as well.
I actually like Vedic Barayal quite a lot. It's a really good return actor, and you know, of course, he's got to be the this quarter's love fling for Kira Nerys.
And one thing I'm noticing here, like, because I'm looking at Wikipedia when I'm reading out the list and stuff, Frank Langella keeps saying that he's uncredited as Minister Jaro. So I don't even remember if his name came up on the credits.
It didn't.
That's weird. Like, maybe it's because he was still.
I know the story.
Okay, go ahead.
So Frank Langella's kids were huge Star Trek fans. They loved apparently all Star Trek. And so he ended up taking the role in it just because his kids were such huge fans. But he didn't want, he didn't want a fuss made about him being in it. Okay. So he just did it uncredited.
That's cool.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I hope he still got paid for it.
He became a huge fan afterwards, too.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I heard that's why he did Masters of the Universe as well. Like, he was, his kids were played with He-Man toys, and they wanted him to be Skeletor. And also, I believe he actually at one time dated Whoopi Goldberg, if I remember correctly.
Yep. Yeah, he did for like 4 or 5 years, I think.
Poor guy.
Again, all these interconnected Star Trek stuff. It's cool. Last season we had Leonard Nimoy's wife as an admiral, and she does come back in this season as well. And then we had Minister Jaro having dated Guinan at one point. Like, that's pretty cool. But yeah, like, this was a great episode. Lots of action. Unfortunately, Lee Nollis is killed, much to his relief, I think. I think he was happy to bite the dust because he was tired of being, treated as this, almost godlike character. Like,
I wish they would have kept him because he would have been a good choice. For first minister, perhaps. Maybe as good or better than Shakar eventually, I don't know, but he would have been a good choice. Definitely, like, not who they almost got.
Like,
sorry, go ahead, please.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, that was, like, one thing that was kind of lacking, like, up until we got Shakar, was we didn't really have that connection with the Bajoran government. Not really. Like, we'd see the odd minister here and there. But yeah, like, Lee Nollis would have been the good bridge, right, to have between Deep Space Nine and the Bajoran government. But go ahead, Curtis.
No, that's actually totally a good point. I was just going to say we needed Lee Nollis to come in later, because without Lee Nollis, you don't really have the buildup between Odo and Kira that pays off so well at the end of season 6, I want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when we get to that, yeah, I'm interested to see what your guys' thoughts are on them getting together. Because to me, I always thought it was kind of a mistake. But it kind of felt like when Scully and Mulder got together on the X-Files, it was like, I liked it better when they were friends. But anyway.
But everybody was cheering for Odo. Come on.
Oh, yeah, no, like, yeah.
Absolutely.
But remember that episode when Odo hooked up with that chick when he was a solid? I was cheering for him on that episode, too. Because she was kind of hot, that guest star chick.
Absolutely. That would just...
Oh, was that the chick who was not that chick?
Yeah, the brain implant.
Yeah, with the data port or whatever?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But anyway... moving on. Next episode is the 24th episode, 4th of the season, and it's called Invasive Procedures. And the star date is 47182.1, directed by Les Landau. Story by John Wepley. Teleplay by John Wepley and Robert Hewitt Wolf. Original air date, October 17th, 1993. A plasma storm leads to the evacuation of most of the station, but a Trill refugee has his own plans.
I'm going to throw this out there right now. This is one of the episodes that makes me think that, Tim Russ or the character, maybe Tuvok, was basically either immortal or he was a Vulcan, but he was maybe like a Section 31 guy all through history of some sort, There was some fan theory I remember hearing about, and It had something to do with, you know, Tuvok actually being all of these people and in disguise or in some kind of you know, undercover situation.
That is cool. And it's too bad that Volcon got canceled this year, because Tim Russ was supposed to show up. And I've never actually got the chance to meet him yet. And yeah, there's so many questions I wanted to ask that guy. And that would have been a perfect one to throw out there for him.
And he killed it as a Klingon. I enjoyed his portrayal of T'Kar.
Yep. And also John Glover as Varad. I like that actor. Like, he's one of those actors that's in a lot of things. He was let me think here. He was Lex Luthor's dad in Smallville, Lionel Luthor. He's been in a number of other genre stuff. I really like him. Most recently, I think he was in the Shazam movie. He played the bad guy's dad. He always seems to play bad guy's dads for some reason. Or
or just a bad guy in general.
Or just a bad guy in general, yeah.
I want to say Varad and John Glover, I like how well he played that. Because when you first meet him, he's super shy, quiet, you know, kind of that, like, closet sociopath you're kind of worried about in school. And then all of a sudden, you could see, like, a visible change, as you would expect with a symbiont of that caliber being placed inside of him. And it's just a really, like, it just goes to show that he is actually a good actor.
And it shows, it's interesting to see how a symbiont will adapt to the host, right? Like, I remember when I first saw this episode, I remember thinking, well, as soon as Dax gets into him, Dax is going to say, hey, we can't let her die. I want to go back in her. And then that's what'll happen. But then that's not what happened. Like Dax was kind of taken over, I guess, a little bit. Like, they melded to the point where he wasn't willing to help her.
I think his personality was strong enough that he could be in control. That's one of the things about Trill hosts, is that they have to have a strong personality to the point where they're not completely overwhelmed by the strength of the symbiont.
Yeah,
look what happened to Ezri.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And yeah, like, he did a really good job in this episode. This was also a great episode, I thought. And then, of course, Quark plays into, you know, what happened here. And, you know, he ended up helping save the day. But, yeah, Quark. Quark being Quark.
So I read an interview with Armin Shimmerman, I think that's how you say his name.
Yep.
Who plays Quark. And he said this was one of his least favorite episodes because he didn't feel like Quark, you know, paid a penance or got punished for his actions here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they basically looked it over. Yeah, they basically looked it over because he finally ended up doing good. But he's the reason they were there in the first place. So, I mean, I would have put on a punishment strap for sure.
Well, he should have at least got like a month in the brig or something.
Yeah.
All right. So the next episode, episode 25, and it's episode 5 of the season, and it's Cardassians. Sturdy 47177.2, directed by Cliff Boyle. Story by Gene Wolande and John Wright. Teleplay by James Crocker. And I believe this is our second Garak episode. The original air date was October 24th, 1993. Garak investigates the identity of a Cardassian boy, Rugal, abandoned on Bajor, who has been raised by a Bajoran. Yeah, so if memory serves, this was Garak's second episode of the series. Not one of my favorite episodes, kind of just one of those bland episodes, I thought.
It's definitely kind of an in-between episode, and I don't know if anybody knows this, fun fact, but director Cliff Boyle was the reason behind the naming of Boleans for Boleyn.
Cool.
literally the most interesting thing about this episode.
Basically, yeah. So there's not a whole lot about the episode. Garak just does his thing, hanging out with Bashir. You know, it's about a Cardassian war orphan, or not even a war orphan, because it wasn't really a war, but it was a Cardassian orphan on Bajor. Yeah, I don't have a lot to say about this episode. It was mediocre.
Yeah, it was.
Ragnar? In agreement, or do you think it's...
Oh, yeah. No, this episode was kind of a very forgettable one.
Yeah. Speaking of, like, Boleans and naming and stuff, the TNG episode, third season, I can't remember the name offhand. It's the one with the wormhole, and they're all trying to...
Price.
The Price. It's
called The Price.
Yes. Beta Z negotiator, he was representing the Chris aliens in that episode. And I always thought that was cool, because my name is Chris. And basically it's Chris and aliens put together.
I never put that together before. That's awesome.
I hadn't put that together either until I think I bought the Blu-rays like back in 2013 or something. I was like, wait a second. I want to know what those guys look like. But anyway, episode 26, sixth of season two, is Melora. Stardate 47229.1, directed by Winrick Colby, story by Evan Carlos Summers, teleplay by Evan Carlos Summers, Stephen Baum, Michael Piller, and James Crocker. And it was a Halloween air date in 1993. Bashir tries to help Ensign Melora Paslar, the first Elasian, I think I said that right, to join Starfleet. And he's helping her adjust to normal gravity. I didn't mind this episode. I liked Melora. I thought she, you know, even with the alien makeup, I thought she was very beautiful. I thought it was, you know, right on that Bashir, you know, finally got a little girl action, you know. You know, the young guy on the station, who wasn't Dax, because I mean, he spent, you know, the first 25 episodes of the series pining for Dax, and now he finally meets someone else. And you know, like, I know what they're going for here. Like, they're showing, like, you know, someone that's handicapped, you know, with her having to have a wheelchair. And I like, you know, like, they did the anti-gravity stuff. I thought that was kind of neat and all that. But it was a fine episode. I didn't mind it. I liked that guy that was, you know, on Quark there, like the bad guy of the episode. You know, definitely Quark, once again, in over his head with this guy. And if I remember correctly, the people that wrote this episode, originally, they were going to have... That I can't remember that character's name, the bad guy of the episode. They're going to have him put those earworms into Quark's ears, like from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, to get Quark to do his bidding. But they were shot down. They weren't allowed to do that because it was too graphic. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Curtis, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, it's not one of the ones I skip. I guess I don't really have much to say on it. It's enjoyable enough. I'm a big fan of the Quark side stories.
Yeah, it's not the best episode. It's definitely not the worst.
And man, Siddig's acting in the anti-gravity room. Just, oh my God. I love him in so many scenes. Not that one.
I'll have to go back and watch. I haven't watched this one in years. But yeah, I'll have to see. Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
Well, I really only have one thing to say about this episode, which was the Klingon chef is in this episode.
Oh, yes.
And I was always sad that he didn't become a, you know, a more of a fixture in the background the way Morn is, because he's one of my favorite little characters.
Yeah, you see him a couple more times as the series progresses. Yeah, you do. But yeah. And Richard, what are your thoughts?
I'm going to echo what Ragnar said about the Klingon chef, because he's got a really big personality, and I did think it was kind of cool the way Melora, like, kind of was like, hey, a-hole. Give us the good stuff. Don't give us the crab. And the Klingon chef was like, damn, girl. All right, let's get it. For Melora, I actually thought she was rather attractive. I'm a big fan of female aliens in makeup. Just as a side note for myself. But I think she overplayed it a little bit. And the writing was a bit extra in that she was very much attached to her disability. And I think that she just didn't want to let go of being disabled in that way. And she just wasn't ready to be more independent. But I think it would have been a cooler idea, you know, to actually have her take the treatment and become 100% like independent from the chair and the exosuit, because that's essentially what she was looking for. She left her home planet to go and be independent and to do things, and this is just going to continue to hold her back. And I think that it was a mistake for her to choose that. Like, in universe, I think it was a mistake for her to choose that. She was acting in the anti-grav room. Yeah, I agree with Curtis on that one. But all in all, it was an all right episode. I liked some of the character development. You know, Bashir finally got himself a lady for a short time. And, of course, Quark is awesome. But one thing I'm curious about, the bad guy, he's a Uridian, and he's got a part of his nose covers his mouth. Like, ever thought, like, how hard would it be to drink and eat with that in the way? You know, I was like watching it the other day, like last week when I'm rewatching the series, and I'm like, what in the heck, man? How do you eat and drink with that in your face?
Well,
maybe. I had the exact same thought.
Man, have you seen some of like the 20-year-olds running around with some of their body modifications these days? Ask yourself the same question. Yeah. Now tell me that alien's really that weird.
Yeah.
Well, fair.
Well, they might be a smoothie society that he comes from, right?
Yeah, just like a double straw kind of deal, right?
Yeah.
They just juice everything.
Yeah.
One thing I really liked with this episode that they were going for was showing that there are different, like, aliens, not just in appearances, but different alien worlds would have affect people differently, right? So I kind of like that we finally see something like that where, you know, gravity's an issue for her. It's something that, you know, I didn't really think of before.
That's true. We have, like, the Benzites who have their own strange things going on. Yeah. But, yeah, no, it's not something you ever thought about until this episode came along. It was like, huh, yeah, I guess that'd be a factor, wouldn't it?
Yeah. All right, so next episode is episode 27, episode 7 of the season, Rules of Acquisition, stardate 47261.7, directed by David Livingston, story by Hillary J. Bader, teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear, original air date November 7th, 1993. Quark represents Grand Nega Zek in a plot to establish her Ferengi business presence in the Gamma Quadrant. Pell, a young Ferengi, teams up with Quark, and they learn that to do business in the Gamma Quadrant, you must contact the Karma, a member race of the Dominion. So, this wasn't one of my favorite Ferengi episodes. I really thought they, like, I love Grand Nega Zek. I love Wallace Shawn. But when I rewatched this episode, I've totally forgot, like, how much more animated he was in this episode. Like, he really seemed like he was kind of off the wall a little bit. And it was okay. Like, it wasn't terrible or anything. But yeah, this was the first mention of the Dominion on Deep Space Nine. And as soon as they dropped that name, I knew this was going to be big. Like, I knew that, this is going to pay off later. that they were starting to build to something here. Richard, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was not too bad. I did like some of the interactions. Again, a Quark episode heavily. And going along with some of the ideas that Star Trek always has, being progressive, it was essentially a trans exposure episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't have any problems with it. They've been, Ferengi females have been trying to be more accepted in Ferengi society for a very long time. So I like that they included that, giving more of an insight into Ferengi culture, which they don't do a whole lot of, and I wish they would do more. And aside from that, the character that played the larger male Dosai, mm-hmm. He is kind of a side actor in a lot of different things, and I forget his name, but he's really good, and Brian he's really Thompson. Scary. Pardon?
Brian Thompson is his name.
Yes. And he plays in a lot of really, I think, did he not play in Lost as well?
No, but he was Shao Kahn.
Really?
In Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Yeah, he was Shao Kahn.
I think he was in the X-Files, too.
Oh, yeah, he was the bounty hunter in the X-Files.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was in the original Terminator movie. He was one of the guys that Arnold kills. He was one of the first guys to get killed by the Terminator. Him and Bill Paxton. And yeah, he's in a lot of things. That guy, he's been on Deep Space Nine later on. He's the episode. What's the episode? It's season four. It's when the Jem'Hadar, where we first meet Wei Yun, and they have to. You fight with the Jem'Hadar to fight the Jem'Hadar, or fight with the Jem'Hadar against the Jem'Hadar, because they have that Iconian portal.
Right.
So the guy in that episode...
Right, he was Taman T'Rex.
Yes. The guy that gets his neck broken when he's fighting Worf. Yeah.
He also played in Shades of Grey clip episode and TNG episode Matter of Honor. He was Lieutenant Clegg.
Yes.
And he played another Klingon in Generations. And, fun fact, he also played in Enterprise.
Yep.
He was Admiral Valdor, which I believe some of the newest warbirds were named the Valdor class. Mm-hmm. There may be a connection there. I like that.
Yep. Yep. He's a great actor. I like that guy. And I think he's great. Canadian. But I'm not entirely sure. But anyway, Ragnar, did you have anything to add?
As far as the Ferengi episodes go, I think this was one of the weaker ones. But the biggest thing I always took away from is that I was just always really sad when Pell revealed, that she was a woman. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the end of her character. I always thought it would have been really neat if her and Quark had of, maybe had a secret relationship that continued to go or something.
Or at least have her come back, and to do some business with Quark later on.
Yeah. I thought she was a strong enough character that I was disappointed she was just a one-off and we never see her again.
Yeah.
And just as a quick note, I like that they continue using the tuliberry wine trope throughout the entire series. I thought that was a really cool throwback. Like every other season, a couple times, they'll throw in the whole tuliberry wine thing, and I like that they kind of call back to that.
And I think when I originally read this out, I think I called them the Karama, but I think they're the Karama. I think
both pronunciations are acceptable.
Karama. Is it the same as the Karama? Because the Karama was the one that they... Oh, anyway. And, I'm getting my names confused here, I think. All right, well, let's move on to the next episode, episode 28, 8 of the season, Necessary Evil. Stardate 47282.5, James L. Conway directed. Peter Allen Fields wrote this episode. The original air date was November 14th, 1993. When Quark is shot, Odo reopens a 5-year-old murder case of Mr. Vatrick, who was a Cardassian collaborator. This is one of my favorite episodes of the season for a number of reasons. I found it so fascinating them doing like a flashback episode, with flashback scenes where you see Odo working for Dukat, and you see Tarok Nor, you see, you know, the Bajoran, you know, slaves, you know, going about their business, and you see a young Kira with long hair, and just the twist at the end, like when Odo figures it out, and it was Kira all along, like that was amazing. Like it was so cool. And I love seeing the anytime Rene Auberjonois and Mark Alamo act together, I think is great. I love seeing Dukat and Odo. And there was some good Quark stuff here. Like I love the fact that, you know, Quark underestimates Rom, and Rom's, you know, I can open that in, you know, 5 seconds. Oh no, you can't. Oh yeah, I can. I can do it this way. And Quark's like amazed that Rom can do all this stuff. And he's like, yeah, I've broken into your vault a couple times.
It was a slow beginning to Rom's quiet genius.
Yes. And then when Quark is shot, and then Rom is slow to put it together, Odo kind of walks him through it. He's like, you know, if Quark dies, the bar is yours. And then you kind of see Rom light up. The bar's mine? You know? And then, yeah, I just love that. But Quark loves his brother so much in the end that, you know, he inadvertently helps save his life. Curtis, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Okay, I was not prepared to go first, but I'll give it a shot.
I'm just trying to alternate.
No, it's all good. It was definitely a different tone from the usual for this. Like it was sort of like a mystery whodunit, which I really enjoyed. I like a change of pace every now and then, which is why I love the Ferengi episodes, because they're a little bit silly. I don't want to say silly, but that's all I got.
A little bit
anyway.
Quirky, if you will.
Ho ho. No, it was definitely a change of pace. That's always nice, just because you get into such a pattern of like expectations, and then something like this comes along, and especially like you say, the twist at the end. It's like we've been building up this character of Kira in our minds, and this like it's like a rock getting thrown at a window, and just suddenly there's cracks in what was once like a pristine pane of glass, and now we're like, oh, okay, well, that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So that was good. I like a monkey wrench getting thrown into the works every now and then.
Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
Well, I always really liked this episode. You know, it was a darker episode. We got to see, you know, as you were saying, we got to see Tarak Nor, and we got to see some of the occupation. And I always really enjoyed that. And this episode always gave me a real sense of dread, especially in the flashback parts. And then I really liked the ending where, you know, Kira asks Odo if he'll trust her again, and he says, I don't know. I always thought that felt very honest and believable. It was a very realistic ending.
Yep. And Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I actually really enjoyed it. It is probably one of my favorite sort of season 2 episodes, just because there's some really good character play and some good interactions. I really like when they go back to Tarak Nor, and they kind of show some of the deep and dirty secrets about the occupation and things like that. But as I'm watching it, and we're learning that it was Kira all the way, it reminded me of a further episode, and I want to mention it now because I might forget by that time. But there's an episode where I believe it was Odo, Sisko, Dax and Garrick, they kind of get in sort of a mind loop with Odo.
Yep.
And something to do with Odo's lack of action, you know, there's a number of Bajorans that get executed and so on. It just almost seems sort of maybe hypocritical in the future, knowing that Kira had done something like that, and it was giving Odo issue to trust her, and then she turns around and kind of does the same thing to him, and just sort of like connect those dots in my head. Maybe there's nothing there, but I just sort of made me think a little bit. But all in all, it was a well done episode. I was kind of sad that Quark almost died, but I like that they used a compressed Tetrion beam weapon. They talk about that sometimes, like Tetrion weapons, and I like that they use that. I like it when they use sort of in-universe weapons and different technobabble things, and they keep it somewhat consistent. I like continuity and consistency. So,
yep.
Yeah, all in all, good episode. I enjoyed it.
Excellent. All right, so the next episode is episode 29, ninth of the season, Second Sight. Stardate 47329.4, directed by Alexander Singer. Story by Mark Jared O'Connell. Teleplay by Mark Jared O'Connell, Ira Stephen Bear, Robert Hewitt Wolf. And original air date was November 21st, 1993. A mysterious woman, Fenna, catches Sisko's eye during their fleeting meetings. Yeah, this was an episode.
tell us how you really feel, buddy.
I didn't hate it. Like, it was just, you know, I felt bad for Sisko. You know, they finally give him a female interest, and she doesn't actually exist. one thing I remember about this episode really liking was the use of the, I believe it's the Nebula class starship.
Gideon Zaytek ship.
Oh, yes. I thought that was pretty cool. But other than that, it was just one of those episodes. Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
No, I'm with you. I never thought this was that great of an episode, and it just seems so weird to me, Sisko having a love interest that he found and developed so quickly, and then of course it turns out she doesn't actually exist. And you know, I definitely thought that was a parallel to my own love life at many different points.
Feel you there, buddy.
But overall, when I rewatch the show, this is usually one of the episodes I skip.
Yeah, like I said, it wasn't the worst episode. Like, there's definitely a far worse episodes you could watch, but definitely not one of the most memorable, at least in my opinion. Richard, what are your thoughts?
Again, with the love interest thing, honestly, I don't know that it was that great of an addition to the scripts. The actress, very attractive. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Actually a pretty decent actress, given that she had to play two completely different roles. Actually, who I liked the most was Gideon Zaytek. He was extremely boisterous and confident and loud. And in-universe, he terraformed a freaking sun. Like, how cool is that, honestly? Like, dude's a badass. That's it. That's all I have to say about that. But, you know, again, a mediocre episode with a couple of really cool points.
Yeah. And Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I am so glad that douchebag fly into a star and died. That's all I have to say about that episode. Not a fan.
Excellent. All right, so the next episode, episode 30 of the series, 10 of the season, Sanctuary, Stardate 47391.2, directed by Les Landau. Story by Gabe Esso and Kelly Miles. Teleplay by Frederick Rappaport. Original air date, November 28th, 1993. The Skria, am I saying that right? The Skria?
Yeah, they're the Skrians from Skria, I believe. Okay.
Yeah, they're displaced humanoid farmers from the Gamma Quadrant, and they claim Bajor as Katana, their legendary homeland.
Sorry, Kentana.
Kentana. And this is the second mention of the Dominion. The Dominion are mentioned in this episode as well. Another episode of Deep Space Nine. One thing I would want to note here is one of the characters, well, let me look here, his name was Tumak, was played by Andrew Koenig, who is Walter Koenig's son. So that would be Mr. Chekhov's son. Other than that, this is one episode that I really didn't care about. And also, what's that actor's name? William Shallert, I want to say his name is. He was on the episode Trouble with Tribbles in the original series, and he plays... Was he a Vedic, or he was some sort of priest or something?
He was a musician.
Well, oh, okay.
He was the musician who had played, auditoriums and such.
Yeah. I just remember him being from Trouble with Tribbles. He was the one who was worried about his grain in that episode. And then he later did this episode of Deep Space Nine, 25 years later, or however long it was. Actually, more than that, almost 30 years later. Maybe 25. Richard, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Honestly, again, a very forgettable episode. I guess this is one time when they decided to try something somewhat progressive that didn't really work too well. They kind of pushed that a bit much. The acting was... didn't really care for it. Like, Tumak and his male cohorts, it just seemed a bit extra. And then the Skreeans, the female leaders of the Skreeans, seemed very ungrateful, and they didn't really understand sort of the proper economics. The Bajor just could not sustain 3 million refugees, and I agree with the Bajoran government on this one, that they shouldn't have taken them in because there's too many of them, and they're already having their own problems. And they went out of their way and they put a lot of work into finding a suitable home that would have been great for them, and they just sort of just kind of flipped them off and didn't seem at all grateful for all the work that they did for them. And in general, just again, sort of a season two kind of MO with some mediocre episodes.
Well, and one thing that to take note from this episode is it kind of plays into what's happening in the world now, like in terms of refugees and stuff like that. Like, it again, Star Trek being very progressive for its time. Very, very neat. And Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I try to have as few as possible regarding this episode. I generally skip it. I've watched it a couple times. Just, I don't know. It doesn't capture me at all.
Well, and one thing to remember, like if anyone was watching this as they were being released at the time, this was kind of like the fall finale. Like, this was the last episode for over a month. Like, the next episode didn't air until January 2nd. So it kind of, like the fall, now they call it a fall finale. But back then, that was the last episode that you got for a little bit. And it kind of went out on a whimper for going into that little break. Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
Well, I was like you were just pointing out there, for a fall finale, that's a pretty disappointing note to end on.
Yep.
But I did like the concept of, the men are kind of the servants to the women. Like, I thought that was kind of a fun gender reversal kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I remember watching it for the first time as a kid and, kind of chuckling about that. But otherwise, it's not the greatest episode.
All right. All right, so next episode is episode 31, 11th of the season. It's Rivals, Stardate 47349.2, directed by David Livingston, story by Jim Trombetta and Michael Piller, teleplay by Joe Manosky. Original air date January 2nd, 1994. Quark feels threatened when a charming swindler, Martis Mazor, opens a competing bar for Club Martis, or called Club Martis. So I didn't mind this episode. It was a good Quark episode, him fighting or, having to have some competition. I like that. we also had the B story of O'Brien and Bashir competing at racquetball, which was interesting. Also on this episode, the guy, the character Martis, if I remember correctly, was a Nalorian. He's from the same species as Guinan.
Yes.
And Soren. So that's how he's able to kind of swindle people, because, you know, he listens to them. And they tell, basically, an Elorian, kind of their power is their ability to listen and to kind of sway people one way or another by talking to them. All right, Curtis, what are your thoughts on this episode?
I really dig it. This is one of the few episodes where I can't decide whether I like the primary storyline or the B story more.
Mm-hmm.
I get the feeling I might be the only one who liked the A story in the group, considering how we all felt about Move Along Home last time. Kind of strikes me as sort of the same, but maybe not. But no, like you say, he's an Elorian, and having only met three Elorians in all of Star Trek that I'm aware of, it seems like they're a really varied species, unlike all the other alien species that we meet. You've got this guy who's sort of a smarmy swindler type.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Guinan, who's like the sagely... I don't even know what else to say about Guinan, but she's very sagely.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Soren, who's, of course, just a madman in pursuit of his own goals. And like, it's the only species we really see that has that variation in flavor. You know, Klingons have a little bit of variation, but not much. Romulans, basically no variation. So it's cool. It's cool to know there's another race out there besides human that's humans that can, like, think critically and not just conform to the mold of their species.
Mm-hmm. Ragnar, what are your thoughts, sir?
Well, I think this is a great episode. You know, a little bit lighter hearted, and I thought it was a really fun time. And I thought it was so cool that there was a device that, you know, could essentially give you infinite. As a kid, I thought that was a really cool concept, and I just did not understand why they destroyed the device at the end.
Mm-hmm.
As an adult watching the show, yes, it makes sense. It was the right thing to do. But as a kid, I remember thinking, why would you destroy that? Like, the next time you go into battle, wouldn't that be an awesome thing to bring with you? So, yeah.
Yep. That's interesting. Richard, what are your thoughts?
I actually, too, really liked it. And it kind of reminded me of an episode of Red Dwarf where one of the doctors in the history of Red Dwarf had developed vaccines of sorts that could be, you could inject somebody with luck or with some of these other sort of whimsical things.
Mm-hmm.
And this device essentially was that if it felt like it, you know, and I really liked the idea of like how they explained, you know, how things would go in certain directions because of the way, you know, the molecules and things were rotating in a certain fashion. And I actually really liked it. And I thought it was hilarious that Martis, the con man, got conned. I thought that was great.
Yep.
At the end there. And I really, really liked the rivalry between O'Brien and Bashir. They hadn't quite started their friendship yet, and they just were kicking off their rivalry, and I thought it was fantastic. And I don't know why, but I really like that weird-looking alien dude who first gives Martis the device, and then he dies shortly after. But all in all, I thought it was a good episode, and I enjoyed that sort of like character play again, because it's almost entirely – there's so much of Deep Space Nine that's character-driven, and I love it. And this is one of those episodes just like plays on character abilities. Awesome.
Yep. Excellent. All right. So I think that I asked everyone around the table, right, for this episode?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Let us move on. Episode 32. It is 12th of the season. The Alternate. Stardate 47352.1, directed by David Carson. Story by Jim Trombetta and Bill Dial, teleplay by Bill Dial. Original air date, January 9th, 1994. A scientist, Dr. Mora Pohl of the Bajoran Sciences Institute, finds a life form in the Gamma Quadrant that may be related to Odo. This was an alright episode. I like that actor, James Sloan, who plays Dr. Pohl, or Dr. Mora, sorry. I keep forgetting Bajoran's, Mora's, is family name. He also played Admiral Jarok in the Defector episode, season 3 of TNG. And he also played Worf's son Alexander, the future version of Alexander in the TNG season 7 episode. I can't remember the name of that episode, but.
And he also played the scientist in Voyager that made the Metreon Cascade that basically murdered, thousands upon thousands of Talaxians.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, good character actor. I like that guy. It was interesting to, meeting this guy, seeing where Odo got his hairstyle from, learning a little bit more about the backstory of Odo. Wasn't the best episode, but it was a fine episode. I always kind of wished we'd see Dr. Mora later on in the series, especially when the Founders were revealed. I thought it'd be kind of neat to see him, maybe become an expert, on shapeshifters. Maybe in that two-part episode in season 4 when they went back to Earth, they might have brought Dr. Mora with them to Earth. I thought that would have been cool. But anyway, I digress. All right, Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
The plot itself didn't really grab me. Like, it was kind of cool that Odo was this big monster having fun, crazy nonsense.
Yeah.
I was more interested in the interaction between Odo and his quote-unquote estranged father, Dr. Mora. And again, like, the actor, fantastic. And I liked a lot of that interplay. It was a pretty good episode. I just wasn't my favorite as far as, like, A plot episodes. Yeah. It was a pretty decent episode.
Yep. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I remember at the start of this episode being so excited at the concept of, like, getting to learn more about Odo and maybe find more people like Odo, and then being a little disappointed that that wasn't what the episode was about. But overall, I thought it was a fairly good episode. And I always thought the ending was quite nice, where Mora kind of realizes that he always treated Odo like a thing and not like a person. And he kind of apologizes for it a little bit, and they start to, become friends or reconcile. And I always thought that was kind of nice. It was a nice ending to it.
Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Solid B+. definitely enjoyable enough. I like it. More importantly, it also sets us up for later on in this series with Dr. Mora. So, I mean, it's an important foundational episode, I think, for things that happen later. But, not unenjoyable. I like it.
He didn't actually come back, did he? Am I forgetting an episode?
He did. He came back twice. Odo was a solid, and Quark found the baby changeling.
Was he in that episode? Oh, man, I totally blanked on that. I thought this was the episode he had been on.
No, he's at least two more.
Yeah.
Really?
I think he's more than that, even.
Oh,
yeah. I like that they brought him back consistently. He was a good one to bring back.
Yeah, when Odo was a solid, they found the baby shapeshifter later on, and Dr. Mora encouraged him that, like, no, you need to make it uncomfortable to motivate it to hold a shape.
Right.
And then, of course, later on, he becomes a shapeshifter again, thanks to all that.
Right. I completely blanked on that. Wow. I definitely skipped that episode when I did my rewatch a few years ago. Now that you say all that, I totally remember that. Because, I remember that, him and... and Dr. Mora were, you know, at odds about that, right?
Yeah, and he gets turned into a Tarkalian hawk again at the end of the episode.
Yes, okay. Wow, thank you, gentlemen. Like that, wow. I can't believe I totally forgot about that. All right. Did we go around the table? Because I'm not trusting my memory.
Yep.
All right. Okay. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that episode now that you guys mentioned that.
You definitely need to.
And you say that he might have been on more episodes beside that one? Or was it just
I'm confident he was in two more at some point.
Okay. Yeah, it might have been three more. I can't totally recall.
All right. I'm going to definitely look. I'm writing this down so I remember. Dr. Mora. Yeah, because I completely forgot about that. Crazy. All right, so the next episode is episode 33 of the series, 13th of the season, and it's the Armageddon Game. Stardate 47444.8, directed by Winrich Kolbe, written by Morgan Gendel, and the original air date was January 30th, 1994. O'Brien and Bashir help two warring races, the Kalarians, and the Talani, erase all knowledge of a deadly biological weapon, but are not trusted to keep what they have learned a secret. I like this episode. I liked O'Brien and Bashir working together. I liked the fact that, you know, they were asked to go help destroy these weapons, and then they're like, yeah, now that we've destroyed all the other knowledge, now we got to kill you too, because you guys know. And I like that Keiko kind of figured it out. So before we go around the table, I want to pose a question to you guys. You know, and I don't understand this, so this is why I'm asking. I see a lot of memes on social media in regards to Keiko, and it seems to me like a lot of people don't like her. And I don't understand it. I always liked Keiko. I never, ever really had an issue with her. But yet I see all these memes about kind of like that Keiko was kind of a hag and people didn't like her. So I just wanted to ask you guys, what are your thoughts on Keiko? Richard, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Keiko?
On Keiko specifically, I actually really like her. As a young child, she was probably the first, one of the first Asian women that I had a crush on. So,
yeah,
I'm sure you know where that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I don't see where the hate is. For me, the relationship between Keiko and Miles seemed very realistic to how a married couple actually would be.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have good times, they have bad times, they fight, but in the end, you know, they kind of portray like a proper, you know, nuclear family. You know, they have Keiko and then eventually Kiriyoshi. And I really like her, to be honest, and she's a pretty good actor, and she gets more juicy roles in Deep Space Nine than what she did in TNG. I wish they would have used her a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But all in all, yeah, I like her. But memeing is just memeing, and you know what? If it's a funny meme, I'll share it regardless. You know what I mean?
Yeah, And I'm not knocking anyone that shares in a meme or anything. I just didn't understand where it came from, because that was never a thing. Like, as far as I was concerned, I would see the Wesley memes, you know, like the "Shut Up Wesley," and I was like, okay, I kind of get it, right? Like, you know. I know that was one of the criticisms, is that, you know, Wesley, you know, always saved the ship, even though he really didn't. Like, he only did it maybe once or twice. But I never understood the Keiko thing. Curtis, what are your thoughts on Keiko?
If I were, of all possible positions, the chief engineer of Deep Space Nine and were married to Keiko O'Brien, the day that she was just happened to be walking down a corridor that mysteriously depressurized into open space, it would take every ounce of acting skill I could muster to pretend I was surprised enough to have my credulity not be questioned, being the chief engineer. I can't stand Keiko.
Really? Wow. Okay. This is perfect.
Something would go wrong at some point. Either it's me or her. I can't. Yeah.
So,
I don't know.
So what is
she's such an incessant nag. Like, nothing's ever good enough, you know? O'Brien, he can't please her. Now, in this episode, I'm not going to lie. I like her in this episode because she's like, yeah, that's my husband. I know what's up. And that's kind of cool. But outside of this episode, oh, my God, wonderfully acted. And that's why I hate her so much.
Interesting. Ragnar, what are your thoughts on Keiko?
I always liked Keiko. I actually wasn't really aware until just now that people didn't like Keiko. I always thought she was cool. I always thought her character made sense. You know, she was a little bit strict maybe, or a little bit uptight, and that kind of balances out the everyday, you know how like Chief O'Brien's supposed to be like the working man that you can relate to. Yep. So I thought that, you know, she was a good foil to that, you know, being that she was a little bit more prim and proper than he was.
Yeah. Well, no, and I think that's awesome that Curtis, obviously doesn't care for her. And I never knew that was a thing until I seen that meme.
I feel like I should clarify. I enjoy the fact that the Keiko character is in Deep Space Nine. I'm thankful that she's in Deep Space Nine. Just on a personal level, I don't like Keiko O'Brien.
Oh, that's fair.
I just felt like I should clear that up. I'm glad she's in the show.
Yeah. No, that's cool. That's why I posed that question, because like when I was thinking back to this episode and the fact that, you know, she was kind of the reason why, you know, her husband and Bashir were saved, because she kind of figured it out. But yeah, I never, like, for me, like, I've always loved Keiko. Like, I'm kind of like with Rich. I always kind of had a little crush on her. Especially in season 3 in that episode when she's wearing that really sexy dress. I was like, wow.
Oh, you mean after she acted, you know what? I'm gonna say
I mean, he's not wrong.
No.
Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Some things I obviously don't like, but I still stand by my opinion. But Curtis is also correct in a lot of ways, too, on that.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of, yeah.
No,
I get that.
Yeah, me too.
Can I just run something by you guys from this episode? The whole thing where Keiko says, you know, Miles never drinks coffee in the afternoon, wasn't that like a parody of an actual coffee commercial that was airing around that time?
I actually don't recall.
It might have been.
I swear there was an actual coffee commercial about, you know, the same situation. So-and-so never drinks coffee in the afternoon.
I can't remember.
I could be wrong.
I know for myself, I don't drink coffee after supper because I have a hard time falling asleep. But yeah. No, but anyway, Ragnar, what are your thoughts on this episode?
I thought it was an interesting episode. You know, it's kind of a neat idea. You know, you must imagine that in the future, the technology to fake things would be very extensive. So I always wondered about stuff like that. But I don't know. It's not the most exciting episode in the season. I think it's an average episode, really.
Excellent. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Honestly, I really liked it. And the whole dilemma for me of like the philosophical question or the moral question of should they have terminated O'Brien and Bashir after all of this? And I can understand their point of view. They just had come out of like a really long, intense war of sorts, and they didn't want anyone to be able to replicate this. Now, we know that O'Brien and Bashir are good men, but they don't know that. And they're doing their best to kind of protect their peoples. And I totally get it. And I also really appreciate. I think this was the initiant, the propellant to O'Brien and Bashir becoming best friends was this episode, and I thought it was pretty great. I really liked it.
Excellent. And Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
If the galaxy were a neighborhood, the Federation would be the two friendly Mormon dudes on bicycles going door to door, except instead of preaching, they're offering to help with whatever little task you may have at hand. And I feel like everybody in the neighborhood that is the galaxy just sort of takes advantage of that and then laughs at them behind closed doors. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, everyone's just such a dick to the Federation, and all they want to do is help. And as usual, O'Brien must suffer. But no, overall, I think this episode was, it gave us more development of O'Brien and Bashir's friendship, which, of course, ends up being one of like the major components of the show in later seasons.
Yep. All right. So the next episode is also an O'Brien episode, and it is episode 34 of the series, 14th of the season, and it is Whispers. Stardate 47581.2, directed by Les Landau. Written by Paul Robert Coyle, and original air date was February 6th, 1994. While preparing the station for an upcoming peace talk, O'Brien discovers that the crew have been hiding information from him and giving orders behind his back. O'Brien begins to suspect everyone on the station is gradually being altered or replaced by an unknown force. I really liked this episode. This one kind of... You know, I don't know. I know some people don't like it, but I always liked it. I like that idea that something's going on, and from, because the episode's told from his perspective, everyone is acting strange. Like, Sisko's acting strange. Kira's giving him weird looks. You know, Odo, I think, was on Bajor. He shows up and he seems to be, you know, allying himself with O'Brien. He's like, yeah, we'll figure this out. And then Odo gets turned. And it's like, what the hell's going on here? And then you find out that O'Brien, like the O'Brien we've been following all along, is a clone of the real O'Brien that was actually going to assassinate someone at the peace talks. Originally, that was his what he was going to be programmed to do. So I like that twist that it was actually O'Brien that was replaced and everyone else was normal. But you know, like his ingenuity, you know, his, you know, escaping the station and all that kind of stuff. Like, I really liked this episode. I thought it was a fun little romp in space. Curtis, what are your thoughts?
Some of my favorite episodes are the O'Brien Must Suffer episodes, and this one's super cool. I love a twist ending so much. So we spend like 45-minute episodes. So we spent 40 minutes just rooting for this O'Brien without even understanding why, wondering what's wrong with everybody else except him. And then at the end, we discover we don't even know this guy.
Yeah.
And we've been cheering for him. And, of course, it all starts to make sense. And I don't know. I love a twist ending. I love O'Brien. I don't know what else to say.
Yep.
What's not to like about this episode? A+. Yep.
Ragnar, your thoughts.
Okay, bear with me for a second here. So, I love this episode because it's a style of storytelling that I really appreciate. Okay, so when you watch modern science fiction, specifically stuff by J.J. Abrams or Alex Kurtzman, they have this tendency to wrap you in a mystery and then never tell you the answer to the mystery, to never solve it, and instead start a new mystery. And that's why I couldn't watch the show Lost, because I just got so irritated at the end of every season that they didn't explain the mystery, they just started a new mystery. But in Deep Space Nine, there's a mystery, it's engrossing, it draws you in, you're trying to figure out what the heck is going on, and then they explain at the end what it was. And it's a great twist, but I really appreciate that style of storytelling where they don't leave you hanging wondering, what about that thing? So that's something I really appreciated here. It was excellent storytelling.
May I interject?
Yes.
I just wanted to say, Ragnar, buddy, anytime you want to talk about Lost Man, I am down. I have all the theories, bro. I'll hook you up.
Okay, because it really hurt me.
Well, now that you say that, Curtis, we should do a Lost episode, because I also like... Well, I don't know if you like Lost, Curtis. I assume you do. I like Lost.
Buddy, I will ruin you. I swear to God. I could talk for 3 hours on every episode. Don't even get me started. I'm down. Let's do it.
All right. You don't even know how many hours we've just been... We've talked about Lost, let alone watch it. Curtis has probably watched more Lost. Okay, that's not true. I've watched more Star Trek, but close. He's probably closely watched Lost as often as I've seen Star Trek, and that's hella impressive.
Excellent. Well, then the Deep Space Nine discussion panel, we will do a Lost episode.
I get to be the guy who doesn't like the show.
You can ask all the questions and I'll explain.
And there's
need a guy like that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, because I love when all sides of the argument or whatever, all sides of the discussion are represented. I think it makes for good talk. All right. Who did I leave off? Richard?
I think
you still have to go.
So, again, Ragnar hit that right on the head, where that type of storytelling is brilliant, and you don't actually know it's not him. There's no clues. I watched it just the other day, and I tried to put myself back in that place, you know, where you're super young and you're watching it for the first time. There was nothing there that was, like, pointing towards him being the imposter, and everything pointing towards everybody else being the imposters. Well, obviously that was the perspective of the show, but it was done well. And Miles O'Brien is one of my absolute favorite characters. And again, the Miles Must Suffer episodes are awesome. So this was top notch. I thought it was really cool. And just that twist at the end. I was kind of sad that they actually shot him down. No, that would have been kind of cool to kind of see. Maybe he could have gone and done something elsewhere in the universe and been that everyday engineer man and just kicked it somewhere else. That would have been a cool kind of like side story. But yeah, all in all, great episode. And I'm also down for a Lost discussion night. And at some point, we talked briefly about Babylon 5. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, we still have a lot of DS9 to get through.
you're right. Let's worry about that.
Well, I think for the Lost episode, we'll take a break from Deep Space Nine between seasons at some point, and then just to kind of give it a little time to breathe. And obviously, I got to go back and rewatch some episodes, because, like I said, I don't remember. Like, Dr. Moore completely forgot he showed up later on. But anyway, is there anyone else that needed to go for this episode? Curtis, did I ask you yet?
Yeah, you asked me first, buddy. We're good to go.
All right. Well, let's move on to episode 35, 15th of the season. That is Paradise. Stardate 47573.1, directed by Corey Allen. Story by Jim Trombetta and James Crocker. Teleplay by Jeff King, Richard Manning, and Hans Beimler. Original air date, February 13th, 1994. Commander Sisko and Chief O'Brien are stranded on a planet where their leader, Alixis, rejects technology even when it means the death of others. Again, this is... for me, it fits into that category of that was an episode. Not one of my favorites. Great acting on Avery Brooks' part, though. You know, when he has to get in the tiger cage there and has to go through that torment. But other than that, not one of my favorite episodes. Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
To be honest, it was an episode. I thought Alixis was a complete hag, and she was manipulating and lying, and she was just a terrible person. Not the greatest actor. That one Asian lady that's in the commune, I remember her from somewhere. She's pretty fantastic. One of my, you know, crushes from my younger years. And in general, just like a system that can't really work in the long run, I don't think. But either way, not that great an episode. One of the ones I skip much of the time.
Yeah, so that was Julia Nixon. She was in Rambo First Blood.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as you said that, I was remembering her, too. All right, Ragnar, what are your thoughts, sir?
Well, I, as a kid, really liked the movie Bridge Over the River Kwai, which had a whole sequence just like this episode about putting the guy in the torture box where, you know, he sweats and it's hot. So as a kid, I really enjoyed seeing that, you know. I don't know if it was a direct nod to that or not, but as a kid, it felt like it was. As a grown-up rewatching the show, I definitely have a bit of a Luddite streak in that I don't always accept new technology and I don't always feel that technology is better than people. So there's kind of an interesting, you know, bit in this episode about that, where the society has rejected technology, but rather than see reason, they've just done it because they're stubborn, which, you know, a lot of Luddites are stubborn.
Excellent. And Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I can definitely appreciate your position, Ragnar. I, too, you know, just today, I got the heck away from the city. I was out in the bush. Actually, Chris, I was not too far from your place.
Oh, nice.
It was super cool. It's so nice to just get away from it. And honestly, if I could do that just about full time. So I can appreciate where these people are coming from, but I don't like dishonesty. I got a big problem with that, and I did not like Alexis because she was a liar and a manipulator. And that really bothers me, and I don't think people should be rewarded with, you know, leadership if that's how they go about getting it. That being said, I really love this episode because I just love seeing her get her comeuppance at the end. And being able to watch O'Brien go like, well, it's close as we get to the Predator in Star Trek at the end, where he's like deking out that other guy and hanging his jacket in the trees. And I just, it felt so good that like, oh, yes, vengeance. You know, really enjoy the episode.
Excellent. All right, so the next episode, episode 36, 16th of the season, is Shadow Play, stardate 47603.3, directed by Robert Shearer, written by Robert Hewitt Wolf, original air date February 20th, 1994. Odo and Dax investigate why a village's residents are disappearing. And this is the third mention of the Dominion in this episode. Also, there's some other stories going on here. Kira begins her romance with Vedic Boreal in this episode. And Quark had Boreal brought to the station, so he would distract Kira from what Quark was up to. But, of course, she sees through it and apprehends Quark's accomplice. And also, Jake Sisko begins taking engineering lessons from Chief O'Brien. And then in this episode, he admits to his father that he doesn't want to join Starfleet. Yeah, this was a fine episode. It was, you know, not one of the best episodes, but I don't mind watching this episode. You get to see Odo be an investigator, and he figures it out. You know, it was just one of those episodes where there's a lot going on. It's a fine episode. It's not the best, but not the worst.
Hang on one sec. I just want to let you know, Curtis just stepped away from the computer, so we're going to skip him for this part of the episode.
Sure, absolutely. So, Richard, what are your thoughts on this episode?
You know what? As a kid, I thought it was great, just because it was just kind of a hide-and-seek, you know, whodunit kind of mystery. And I really get where that old guy is coming from, where, you know, he creates, you know, this entire town of people, and he creates his family, and I appreciate where he's coming from. I might do the same thing, honestly, because, I mean, I don't really like a lot of people in general. I'm kind of an introvert. I can be social, but if I have nothing left, hell yeah, I'm gonna take off, and I'm gonna take my holo generator and just live the rest of my life exactly how I want to live it. You know what? And nobody can say anything about it. It's basically a deserted planet. And the actress, the young girl, dang, I forget her name, but she was also in TNG, I believe. She played one of the crewmen's daughters way back when. And in general, yeah, I enjoy the episode on that level. It's all right, kind of analyzing it as an adult. I watch it. I don't skip this one. But, yeah, aside from that, it's not too bad.
Yes. So, yeah, that actress was Nolly Thornton. She was in the TNG episode Imaginary Friend, where she played Clara Sutter.
Right.
And then she was in this episode. And then I'm not sure what she's doing now, but she kind of quit acting in 96. But she's still out there, still doing something. And Ragnar, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, I grew up in a household where we didn't get to watch a lot of television, Star Trek being one of the noticeable exceptions, and I didn't really have video games. And for a lot of my childhood, I was homeschooled, so I didn't have a lot of friends because they were in school while I had the whole day to do whatever I wanted. Mm-hmm. So I liked the idea in this episode about basically, you know, this guy has all these imaginary friends and built a society, which was, as a kid, exactly what I was doing in my own imagination. So I kind of enjoyed that, seeing like, yeah, I could grow up and continue doing this, and that would be normal. But now, looking at it through the lens of the pandemic that we're in, mm-hmm. man, how cool would holograms be right now?
Yep.
So, otherwise, I don't think it's that exciting of an episode. No, yeah. You know, it's good. It's not bad or anything.
Yeah, it's one of those that's right in the middle for me. Yeah. All right, so the next episode, episode 37 of the series, 17th of the season, Playing God. And the star date is 47678.3. Directed by David Livingston. Story by Jim Trombetta. Teleplay by Jim Trombetta and Michael Piller. Original air date February 27th, 1994. Dax is supervising Arjun, a Trill candidate for joining, and she helps him find his voice and discover what he wants from life and from joining. Meanwhile, a proto-universe threatens to destroy the station in Bajor. I like this fine, just this episode just fine. You know, we do get the Klingon restaurant again. We get to see a day in the life of Dax, see all the crazy shenanigans she gets up to in a day. She's quite a busy young old woman. That actor who plays Arjun, he did a fine job. You know, he was a little swarmy, you know, Trill that was kind of full of himself. He played that very well. This was one of those episodes that's kind of right in the middle for me. It's, you know, nothing spectacular, but not a bad episode by any means. Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was an interesting episode. I liked learning more about Curzon. I always was very interested in learning more about him, and I always wished that they could have done some kind of flashback episode to actually have, you know, Curzon in it. I always thought that'd be really cool. Overall, this episode didn't really speak to me that much. I don't remember as a kid being very excited about it, and rewatching it as an adult, and I don't know. It's another middle of the road episode. Not bad. Not great.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure you got to see the Klingon chef in it again.
Yes.
I'm sure he made an appearance.
Yep, absolutely.
And then I did also think the Cardassian voles were kind of, I thought that was kind of a funny problem to have, you know, rats in space.
Yeah, so I think this was the first episode we got to see Gullah Vec. Because we see O'Brien talking to him about the Voles.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, interesting. Richard, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was an all right episode. I, too, really like Curzon, and they talk about him a lot. I wish they could have done so much more, and as much as I don't really care for prequel-type things, I think it might be an interesting, you know, maybe a mini-series, just to show, like, what Curzon did, how he interacted with Kang and Koloth and Kor. They made him out to be one of the most influential Federation ambassadors in the history of the Klingon Empire. Like, you can't even fuck with that. And those are three of the most famous Klingons, three of my favorite Klingons, actually. And, yeah, it would be great to see, you know, a whole episode or, like, a little mini-series dedicated to some of the most important parts of Curzon's life and then leading up to his older years when he became friends with Sisko and their adventures. I think that'd be really cool. But all in all, the episode itself was all right. Some really cool CGI flying to the wormhole. That kind of stuff really intrigued me. But aside from that, pretty decent. I'd give it a C plus, maybe even a B.
And one thing too that you kind of brought up, or crap. My mind went completely blank just now. what the heck was I gonna bring up? Oh, Curzon. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Okay, so Sisko's a badass. I mean, we can't argue that fact, right? You know, and it is mentioned in later seasons that Worf is even intimidated by Sisko because he's such a badass. I wonder if he's such a badass because Curzon taught him to be a badass. Because of all the time that Curzon spent with the Klingons, you know, and learned how to be a badass firsthand from the Klingons, if he imparted that wisdom onto Sisko, and that's why Sisko is such a badass.
Definitely.
Yeah, I've always thought that.
I think that's why Jadzia is such a badass too. Like we talked a little bit earlier about drill personalities. Curzon is clearly the dominant personality in the Dax Symbiont. Like, yep. Jadzia is half Curzon.
Yeah. So, Curtis, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Pretty much just that. You know, it was super cool to get a little bit more insight into this Curzon dude who's been sort of like a... We've heard whispers so far, but it was nice to get a little bit more insight, learn a little bit more about how Jadzia came to be Jadzia Dax. So that's nice. I love character development.
Yep.
As for Arjun, I find him all right, but kind of forgettable. You know, I understand why he's not like a reoccurring character or anything, but even for just a single episode character, like one thing went wrong and he went and moped and drank at Quark's. Like, come on, man, really?
Yeah.
Like, you're not getting joined, dude. I'm sorry. It's not for you.
Yeah.
But solid B+ for an episode.
Excellent. All right, so the next episode is episode 38, 18th of the season, and that is Profit and Loss. Stardate 47701.5, directed by Robert Wymer, written by Flip Kobler and Cindy Marcus. Original air date March 20th, 1994. Quark is reunited with his former Cardassian lover, Natima Lang. She is engaged in a dangerous political intrigue with her students Rakela and Hoag. They want to reduce the political power of the Cardassian military. So this was a Quark episode, but also a little bit Garrick. You got interjecting here a little bit. I always liked this episode. I always kind of wished they would have brought her back. You know, that maybe her and Quark could have, you know, ended up together towards the end of the series. I always liked that character. I like the fact that you know, we learn a little bit more about Garrick in this episode. We get to see him kind of, you know, be a badass, but yet be a good guy at the same time. Curtis, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, it's one of those ones where we get to see some of the side characters that don't make appearances too often. Garrick, who's my favorite or at least one of my favorite characters from Deep Space Nine. So on that note, awesome. I love the character development, like I said in the previous episode. Hilarious to find out that someone actually was in love with Quark at one point. Unbelievable as that may be. That was kind of cool to see, you know, a little bit of like a, yeah, go Quark, get it, son, you know. Yeah, no, I give this one an A. Definitely enjoy it. You get to see some of that political Cardassian stuff, which is super cool. I don't think we got enough of that. But again, a setup for things that would happen later with their resistance and then everything that leads with, you know, the military losing their power. Did they gain the power with the division? Yeah, whatever. Anyway, we know what happens in a couple seasons. So good setup for that.
Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I really liked it. I also enjoy the interaction between Quark and Garak. They play well together, I think. And, you know, again, you know, kind of my trope. I definitely had a crush on Atima, very attractive Cardassian. Mm-hmm. Kind of have a thing for Cardassians in general as a people. I enjoy the race. Great addition to Star Trek, I think, once they sort of put more effort into them as opposed to just the kind of generic hollow bad guys they played in TNG. And aside from that, fantastic episode. Loved it.
Yep. And Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
I'm pretty sure that the actress who played Natima Lang is Bing Crosby's daughter.
I will look that up. So if that's Mary Crosby. So is that Denise Crosby's mom?
I think she's her aunt.
All right. Mary Frances Crosby is an American actress. She played Kristen Shepherd in the television series Dallas. Personal life. Daughter of singer and actor Bing Crosby from a second marriage to actress Catherine Grant. That must be... Okay, I'm looking it up here. Relatives. Denise Crosby is her niece. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, Bing Crosby was busy. Man, there's lots of brothers and a whole whack of relatives here. Interesting. I did not know that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. It's nice to have some Star Trek trivia on you guys because there's not that much.
No, that's awesome. I had no clue about that.
I thought it was a good episode. I enjoyed all the... Well, I mean, every moment that Garak's on the screen is enjoyable. And, you know, at this point in the show, we still didn't quite know Garak that well, and we weren't really sure whose side he was on. And so there was parts of this episode where you thought he was a villain and parts where you thought he was a hero, and then most of it where you really just don't know what he is. And I think that was a very well done episode.
Yep. Excellent. Who hasn't gone yet? Richard?
I think we all have.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next episode. That is episode 39, 19th of the season, Blood Oath. Stardate 47789.8, directed by Winrich Kolbe, written by Peter Allen Fields, original air date March 27th, 1994. Jadzia Dax honors an oath made by Curzon Dax to three Klingons, Kor, Koloth, and Kang, and goes with them on a crusade against their sworn enemy, the Albino, who murdered their firstborn children as revenge for stopping his raid on a Klingon colony. Based on material by Andrea Moore Alton. All right, this probably is my favorite episode of the season. If it's not my favorite, it's my second favorite. This was amazing. Especially bring back those three Klingons from the original series in modern Star Trek Klingon makeup. Was fantastic. Seeing the differences between them. Three great actors. It was awesome that, you know, that they were able to get them to come back. It was awesome they tied in Curzon. The story was fantastic. in my mind, this is really when Deep Space Nine, you know, really just started going up from here. Like, I mean, not that Deep Space Nine was bad up to this point, but I really think this is the episode when it really came into its own, even though it was borrowing elements from the original series for this episode. But it was such an amazing episode that it really, you know, elevated the show to a new level. And that's just my humble opinion. Richard, what are your thoughts on this episode?
I love it as well. Probably my favorite episode of the season. Kang, Koloth, Kor, three major badasses of Klingon history. Again, tying in the Dax lineage there. And I always wondered if we figured out what race the albino is. I can't remember if they said that, because
I just assumed he was a Klingon. He was just an albino Klingon.
Possibly.
But I always thought it was something else.
Me too. I'm just looking here, and it doesn't really say what he was. Great opponent. You know, I really like the kind of like the ploy they have to give the other Klingons an honorable death, but it turns out that they're not going to do that. They're going to go in guns blazing, you know, hand-to-hand combat. And, you know, Koloth and Kang both took the sword and died an honorable death. Everything was great. It showed some of Jadzia's, like, fighting chops, which was really cool, too. And, yeah, A++, 100%, great episode.
Excellent. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Oh, definitely my favorite episode of the season. And I don't know, this is a strong contender for favorite episode of the whole series. This episode definitely elevated DS9 to a higher, you know, position for me. I loved everything about it. You know, I love revenge movies and that whole genre. And so this was a Star Trek take on that. And, as cool bonus trivia, the guy who plays, I don't want to say the wrong name. The guy who plays Kor, mm-hmm, was also in the original Battlestar Galactica. He was the human villain guy, Baltar.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's cool.
When I watched the original BSG well after I'd already seen DS9, and I remember watching it and being like, that guy's voice sounds so familiar. Yeah. And it took me forever to figure out where it was from. So, yeah, great episode. One of the best.
Also, just a quick side note, the guy who played Kang has been in sci-fi a lot. Mm-hmm. He was in Babylon 5. He played, I think his name was Elric, the techno mage.
Yep.
And he, too, he's got a very, very distinct voice. Fantastic actor. Love it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he voices Mr. Freeze in the Batman cartoons.
Yes. Yes.
All right, so we've had side notes on those two Klingons. So I'll do a side note for Koloth.
Yeah.
William Campbell, you know, aside from, you know, obviously being Koloth, and he was, what's his name? He was basically the Q character in the original series in that episode. Oh. Okay.
Trelane?
Trelane, yes. He's Trelane. And not only
I didn't know that.
Not only that, he's actually, at the time, was, like, best friends with James Doohan. Like, him and James Doohan used to hang out.
Oh.
And I don't know, it was a month or two ago, someone shared it on one of the Facebook pages. There's a picture of James Doohan and William Campbell with the original Three Stooges. And it's I think William Campbell and James Doohan must have went to, like, the old folks' home that they were at and, like, just, like, were hanging out with them. And someone took a picture of all five of them. And, you know, people couldn't figure out who the other two were. I'm like, well, that's Scotty and Koloth or Trelane, you know, from the original Star Trek. But, yeah, anyway. Curtis, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Nothing that hasn't already been said, really. You got Klingons, you got blood, you got fighting. What's not to like?
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, have we went around the table before we move on? All right. Just wanted to double check. So the next episode is episode 40 and 20th of the season, and that's The Maquis, Part 1, Stardate 47802.3, directed by David Livingston, story by Rick Berman, Michael Piller, Jerry Taylor, and James Crocker, with teleplay by James Crocker. Original air date, April 24th, 1994. And because it's a two-part episode, we might as well do these both at the same time. Episode 41 and 21 is The Maquis Part 2, Stardate 47805.1. That one was directed by Corey Allen, and story by Rick Berman, Michael Piller, Jerry Taylor, and Ira Stephen Bear, with the teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear. And that air date was May 1st, 1994. So the Federation colonists reject a treaty with Cardassia and take matters into their own hands, forming a terrorist group called the Maquis. And they're planning out to destroy a weapons depot at the Cardassian Brema colony. So, part one, we get, introduced to Cal Hutchinson, or
Hudson.
Cal Hudson. Right. Sisko's good buddy, who it turns out is part of the Maquis, and at the end of episode 2, Sisko and the crew have to fight the Maquis with the help of Dukat. This episode was kind of neat. This two-parter was kind of neat. It formed the building blocks of the Maquis, which would later play into the first, I don't know, four episodes of Voyager, and then they kind of dropped the whole Maquis thing. But it would come... The Maquis would play a bigger role, I think, in Deep Space Nine later on, in later seasons. And we also saw them on The Next Generation as well. A lot of neat things came out of this two-parter. One of them being that Dukat can get on the station and basically get his way into Sisko's quarters completely undetected, because he was the prefect of Bajor for so long, and Deep Space Nine was his station. He knows it better than it seems anybody. I thought that was kind of a neat little twist there. It was neat to see this group form, and completely understandable, that these people would do this. It was a good two-parter that introduces the groundwork for the Maquis, which would, originally was supposed to be the foundation of Voyager, but they really, in the first season of Voyager, dropped the whole Maquis thing really early on. Ragnar, what are your thoughts on these two episodes?
Oh, I thought they were great. I love the whole concept of, the perfect Federation isn't so perfect, and they have this area where they've abandoned these people. And I also really like that, a big part of it was they have to go and rescue Dukat, who, of course, they would much rather not be rescuing. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great. I enjoyed all of the Maquis subplot. I thought it was a nice play on, the perfect Federation where nobody ever gets left behind. And, I enjoyed both of them a lot.
Excellent. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I agree with Ragnar. It's nice to see the sort of the gritty side of being a human in this galaxy who's not necessarily like Mr. Federation, like all the humans seem to be. Really cool to see that. And, of course, the Maquis. It's a good introduction. Not a huge fan of these episodes in particular, just personally. There's nothing wrong with them, but I enjoy the Maquis later on, specifically the Michael Eddington episodes. So I give it an A-.
And Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I actually really enjoy them. I'm a big fan of Cal Hudson. And I thought that it was just super cool that they were, him and Sisko were excellent buddies. And fun fact, Gollivec in this episode, he has been in, he's mentioned or seen in three different series as Gollivec. He was in TNG. He was also, he's in Deep Space Nine and mentioned or seen in Voyager, which I thought was really cool that they kept that continuity because he was the, basically the Gull that looked over the entire DMZ and commander of the Fourth Order. And they kept that. And I thought that was really cool. I thought it was a good sort of introduction to the Maquis and it showed some of what they are capable of and what they want to do. I kind of would have liked to see in future episodes maybe a return of Ensign Roe, you know, with like the Michael Eddington arc. That would have been really cool. But all in all, I agree. Good episodes.
And a couple of quick notes here. Like you mentioned, Gollivec was in this two-parter. And yeah, he was on the pilot episode of Voyager. He's the Cardassian commanding Gollivec was commanding the ship that was going after Chakotay. So he's the one that orders them to surrender and stuff. And then they go into the Badlands and get taken away by the caretaker. Admiral Nechayev makes her Deep Space Nine premiere. She had been on TNG previously. And also, we got John Shuck as Legate Parn. John Shuck, if you'll remember, played the Klingon ambassador in Star Trek 4 and 6. And he was also married to Leonard Nimoy's wife, the lady who played the Admiral from season one. And she was on an episode in this season as well. I think she was on the episode, it's the Armageddon game, the one that we just talked about where O'Brien and Bashir were thought to be dead. I believe that was the episode she was in. I'm just going to double check here. And that's when Sisko contacts her. That's the Admiral that was on. Well, maybe not. But she was on an episode anyway this season at some point. And anyway, that was John Shuck's ex-wife and Leonard Nimoy's current wife. Again, a lot of behind-the-scenes crossing over of Star Trek stars. All right, so let's move on to the next episode. It's episode 42 of the series, 22 of the season, and that is The Wire. And the star date is 47849.8, directed by Kim Friedman, written by Robert Hewitt Wolfe, May 8th, 1994. In order to save Garak's life, Bashir must unravel some of the secrets of the Cardassians' past. I love this episode. Great acting by the actor who plays Garak, whose name is escaping me at this moment. Anybody? Why am I blanking on his name here? Andrew Robinson, sorry. Great episode with him. We get to meet, what's his name there? The head of the Obsidian Order. We get to learn about the Obsidian Order in this
episode. Inobrin Tane?
Yes, Inobrin Tane, played by Paul Dooley. I love that actor. He's one of those actors that's in a lot of things.
He's in Deep Space Nine later too, as one of the members of the Shakar Resistance cell.
Really, Paul Dooley?
The dude who lost his arm. Is that not the same actor?
No, that's a different actor.
Really?
No, he does come back as an Auburn Tane, like in season 3 and then season 5. I can't remember that actor. Wasn't that the actor from Sons of Anarchy?
Yes, I believe so.
Right. Yes, you are totally bang on. My mistake.
Yeah, no. They look very similar, but yeah. Cuz I can't remember that actor's name, but anyway, yeah. Paul Dooley, I love Inobrin Tane. I love that actor. And it was neat to learn a little bit more about Garrick. All right, Curtis, your thoughts on this episode?
Totally cool, man. The Obsidian Order and Auburn Tane, like this spy master who trained Garrick. So cool, man. I love the backstory. Garrick's my favorite character, of course, so learning more about him was just, oh, so good. I don't even know where to begin. I love this episode. A+.
Yep. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Oh, yeah. Great episode. And it has one of the best lines in it, where it's right at the end of the episode, where Garrick says, "All of my stories are true, especially the lies."
Yeah, yep. Funny. Best line in the series, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's such a cool line. Yeah, and, no, great episode. Yeah, lots of fun.
And Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Honestly, one of my favorite episodes. Just the interaction. There's so much between Garrick and Bashir, and it was so good to see the entire episode. They're just playing off each other. Really well done. I love an Auburn Tane. He's kind of like the old badass, and he, you know, sort of trained Garrick, and then Garrick kind of fucked off on him. I actually like the sort of interaction between Bohica and Quark. And Bohica is like, "Well, guess I'm going to die now. This is my life now," when he looks up that Obsidian Order code.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was really cool to throw that in there. But in general, top-notch episode. Loved it.
Quark, you idiot. You've ruined me. Yeah,
that was awesome.
And in this episode, we learn Garrick's first name. Elam. And I loved in this episode how he's talking about his friend Elam, and then you find out from an Auburn Tane that, you know, he just laughs about it, and he's like, "Doctor, Elam is Garrick's first name." So he's, you know, again, just absolutely brilliant. I love Garrick. All right, so the next episode is episode 43 of the series, 23rd of the season, and it is Crossover. Stardate 47879.2, written by directed by David Livingston, story by Peter Allen Fields, teleplay by Peter Allen Fields and Michael Piller. May 15th, 1994. Kira and Bashir accidentally cross into the Mirror Universe, where a Klingon-Cardassian alliance rules. A century before, James T. Kirk had made a similar crossover affecting human and galactic history. Terrans are now slaves on the station. I really, like, out of all the Mirror Universe episodes that they've done on Deep Space Nine and Discovery, you know, aside from the original Mirror from TOS, this is probably my favorite Mirror Universe episode. I really think they wrote this episode without the intention of ever going back. I think they thought it was just a one-off, and then I guess with the popularity of it, they decided to do more. Because, I mean, the fact that they killed the alternate Odo, the alternate Quark in this episode. You know, you didn't actually see a lot of the alternate characters yet. You know, you saw the alternate Sisko. Obviously, the alternate Kira is so goddamn sexy. Like, best costume ever. Or one of the best costumes ever.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And like as a kid, like, I remember, you know, watching Mirror, you know, when I was little, and being blown away by that episode, assuming that when Kirk left Spock, that things were going to turn around for the Terran Empire, that they were going to become, you know, good people. And then to find out that it didn't work out so well. Like, Spock did, you know, lead a change for the Terran Empire, but as a result, you know, the Klingons and Cardassians pretty much decimated them. And now Terrans are slaves. Definitely didn't see that coming, you know, when I watched Mirror. Yeah, this was a great episode. And like I said, my favorite of the Mirror Universe episodes after Mirror. I kind of wish they hadn't went back. You know, like, they did do some good episodes. It was kind of cool seeing, you know, the alternate version of Worf and all that kind
Ezri.
Of stuff. And Ezri. But, you know, it was a little too much. Like, they went to the well a little too much on that. In my opinion. That's just my opinion. For this episode, I love seeing Garrick as like the second in command. Like, I thought that was cool, and he goes full evil. Yeah, and the conspiring, like he's trying to work a deal out with Arkira, you know, to kill the intendant, and then she could take his place, take her place, I mean, and then eventually Garrick would take over. Like, so it was so good. I really enjoyed this episode. Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
To be honest, I'm not a big fan of the crossover episodes in Deep Space Nine. Never really was. I didn't really get into it. The only part of the episode that I really enjoyed was the fact that there was two Kiras and the possibilities therein, and that's all I have to say. That's all I have to say about this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And well, every other crossover episode.
But do you agree with me? You know, best costume, like one of the best costumes ever. That intended costume, yeah.
Oh yeah, 100%.
No, that's refreshing to see that someone didn't particularly like these. Like I said, like this was my out of the Deep Space Nine ones, this was my favorite. I kind of wish they had stopped after this one, but you know. But I digress. Curtis, what are your thoughts, sir?
I love the Mirror Universe episodes in Deep Space Nine. I like being able to see the actors kind of step outside their usual characters and do something different. Pretty much you said just about all of it, and I'm glad you brought up Garrick, because Garrick is the only character, it seems like all the other characters are, you know, Quark isn't quite Quark, Kira is not quite Kira, things are a little different. Garrick is still Garrick in the alternate universe, he's just Garrick in the alternate universe, you know what I mean? Like, the exact same Garrick could go over there and step right into that Garrick's life, no problem. Without missing a beat.
That's
my
true.
Opinion anyway.
That is true.
Yeah, definitely A+ on this episode. Totally loved it. Yes to that intendant uniform.
But oh, yeah.
Again, yeah. I don't think that the intendant really embraces her full potential until we get Mirror Ezri. Well, that's a whole discussion for another time.
And it wasn't just the intendant uniform. It was those dresses that they were wearing at the end of the episode. Like, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Mind blown. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, buddy.
I really wish, and I wish I could go back in time and talk to the writers and stuff. I wish they would have done like this. Like, this could have been like an episode that they did on TNG as well. Like, I really wish they would have done a Mirror Universe tied in with this Mirror Universe episode. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Where we could have saw, like, the pirate Picard and that, you know, like one, that sort of thing.
Surely one of the universes that Worf spent some time in could have been. No, I guess not, because Terran Empire. Right, never mind. I withdraw my comment.
Well, they did do a comic book series not too long ago, IDW did, where they showed, like, the Terran Empire wasn't completely obliterated. Like, they're still out there. But, you know, like, basically, their empire is almost gone. Like, they're kind of like the Empire from Star Wars.
They're Eloriates now.
Yeah, like they're still brutal. Like Picard is still commander of the Stargazer, and it's like a pirate ship, and you know, Data's got like Borg implants, and it was actually kind
Dude,
of
that'd be so cool.
It was a cool comic book, and they tied it into the premise of the Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe episodes. And they did it very well. I highly recommend it. Ragnar, what are your thoughts on this, sir?
Well, I just wanted to say, I mean, yeah, Kira's outfits and costume, or alternate Kira's outfits and costumes were awesome, but so was just the character, because it wasn't just what she was wearing, it was like how she was wearing it.
The way she wore it? Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to say was, I think this alternate universe is supposed to be the same alternate universe they draw from in Star Trek Discovery, but I'm not sure.
I think so.
And yeah, I didn't like Discovery, so I don't have much to say about it, but I think it was supposed to be the same universe.
Yeah. And also the two-part episode from Star Trek Enterprise as well, when they did their Mirror Universe episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. All
Which right. I actually like. I really enjoyed the Mirror episode of Enterprise. And later in time, I'd love to do a Enterprise review series as well with you guys.
You just like to Paul's Mirror Universe outfit.
I love all of the Mirror Universe outfits.
I do, okay? Too. The midriff, shamelessly, I like the same thing.
The midriff is just, it gets me every time.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, I'd be up for, after Deep Space Nine, I'd be up for watching, doing a review of Enterprise for sure. All right, did I cover everybody for this episode?
Okay. I think so, yeah.
All right. So I gotta keep asking that question because, like, while you guys are talking, I'm, like, preparing for the next episode and reading and stuff, so I kind of always kind of lose track where I am. So I apologize. So the next episode is episode 44 of the series, 24 of the season, and that is The Collaborator. Stardate 47921.5, directed by Cliff Boyle. And story by Gary Holland, teleplay by Gary Holland, Ira Stephen Bear, and Robert Hewitt Wolf. May 22nd, 1994. A Bajoran secretary named Cubus, who aided the Cardassian occupation forces, wants to return home from exile. Vedic Wynn engages in a power play to become Kai against Vedic Barail. Out of the last... few episodes of the season, this was in my mind the weakest, but much to my surprise, Vedic Wynn becomes Kai Wynn. I did not see that one coming. Interesting development, and kudos for the writers for going that way, because later on, as we learn, having her as Kai definitely makes for some interesting story potential. And Vedic Barail taking one for the team, his faith in Kai Opaka was so strong that he essentially, took the blame for something she did, which resulted in her own kid being killed, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
So, yeah, it wasn't, again, not a terrible episode by any means, but, just kind of in the middle, in my opinion. Ragnar, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, I think you summed up most of it. Overall, it is a bit slower of an episode, and it's not super exciting, but, it is sort of required viewing if you want to understand who Kai Wynn is.
Mm-hmm.
And she's again, Louise Fletcher steals every second that she's on the screen. You just want to jump through the screen and strangle her. She's so rancid, but she's phenomenal.
Yeah,
that's really all I have to say about the episode. It's a bit slow, but it's important.
Yep. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Both of you guys hit the nail on the head, I think, man. Again, character development, I love it. Absolutely vital for Kai Wynn, of course. I had another thought. Couldn't have been that important. other than that, yeah, very slow episode. If I'm having trouble sleeping at night, this is one of my go-tos for sure. But like Ragnar, I'll echo what Ragnar said. Super important. Wynn is such a powerful character. That's really all I got.
All right. And Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Honestly, I love this episode. It has so much character development, and I don't mind that it's slow. I enjoy the progression of the characters, and I enjoy the interplay. And I love it when they call back to Opaka. She's like, she's my Kai. Kai Wynn's not my Kai,
yep,
kind of deal. And Cubus, what can you say about it? He's a collaborator, and he got what he deserved, So no hard feelings there. But in general, I liked it. Good episode. Would recommend. 10 out of 10.
Excellent. All right, so the second last episode of the season, episode 45 of the series, 25 of season 2, Tribunal, Stardate 47944.2, directed by Avery Brooks, written by Bill Dial. June 5th, 1994 was the original air date, and this is an O'Brien's Gonna Suffer episode.
Beautiful.
O'Brien is declared guilty of an unspecified crime and later tried at a tribunal held on Cardassia Prime. This was, again, in my opinion, one of the middle episodes. It was okay. I liked this episode for a number of reasons. I love the fact that Odo is still an officer of the Cardassian court. I thought it was neat seeing how, Cardassians conduct their justice, where you're guilty until proven innocent. That, everything's staged, that they're a society that loves their propaganda. They love, their big screens, on the sides of their buildings, watching things go down. I believe this is Avery Brooks' first episode he directed as well. All right, so Curtis, what are your thoughts, sir?
This episode is so cool. And the fact that it's directed by Avery Brooks, I didn't actually know that. I feel like his character, Captain Benjamin Sisko, obviously, sometimes they will give that character episodes where they use him to kind of like channel the spirit of what black people sort of used to go through throughout history. Mm-hmm. And his character really leans into that, and I think it really works for him, because you have to consider the context of like the world as it was at the time that these were being released. We talked about this in season one, certain mm-hmm. things too. So for Avery Brooks to be directing this, to have O'Brien as the central character being absolutely unfairly persecuted, definitely speaks to some social political commentary that was obviously important to Mr. Brooks. And I think it comes together really well as like a really cohesive message. Like, there's no way to misunderstand what this episode is trying to do. And like, kudos to Avery Brooks for pulling it together. I think it's just top notch episode, A+. Plus, I love seeing Cardassians get annoyed. So that was super cool.
Yep.
For real.
Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
You know what? I love it. It's a great episode. I really enjoy things that show the backstory, kind of like the lore in video games. It showed some things about the Cardassian world that we didn't know about. And their justice system is swift. Once you're convicted of a crime before the trial, there's no going back. Almost always an execution at the end. And I really, really thought it was cool that they brought out the old Rutledge thing with the colleague on the Rutledge for the O'Brien guy. Oh, wow, yeah. That sounded terrible. I just forget I said that. For Chief O'Brien, he came across his old colleague from the Rutledge. And I like that they kind of did a throwback to the Rutledge, more continuity. Love that. And in general, great episode. Beyond that, I don't have much else to say, that it was really well done. Curtis kind of hit that one on the head, too, just the way he talked about the sort of like sociopolitical issues in our history and how this all comes together. Yeah, fantastic.
And Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, Curtis said, pretty much everything there was to say about it. I just wanted to add that I really enjoyed just the frustrations of the Cardassian legal system and how, the trial is really just, the verdict of the trial has already been reached before the trial starts. So I thought that was kind of funny. And it was neat to see Cardassia because we hadn't really seen much of it. But otherwise, Curtis pretty much summed it up.
Excellent. We go over these episodes, we do these reviews. Like I said, for me, this was like a middle of the road type of episode. But after hearing you guys talk about it, this is one I'm going to go back and rewatch, because obviously, it's been a while. There's some things that I'm probably not remembering. So that's why I love doing these episodes, because it makes me think like, okay, maybe I am misremembering. I got to go back and take a look at that.
Glad we could help you out, buddy.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. All right. So we've reached the season finale, episode 46 of the series, 26th of season 2, and it's the Jem'Hadar. Stardate 47987.5, directed by Kim Friedman, written by Ira Stephen Bear. Original air date, June 12, 1994. Sisko, Jake, Nog, and Quark go camping on a Gamma Quadrant world, but are captured by mysterious soldiers called the Jem'Hadar and meet a force, the Dominion, to rival the Federation. Alright, so I had mentioned Blood Oath was like maybe my favorite episode of the season, maybe my second favorite. This is the episode it's contending with. You know.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
For a season finale, like, you know, it wasn't a direct cliffhanger. Like, this wasn't part one of two. But it was a cliffhanger because it really left you wondering the future of what's going to happen next, you know. You know, we'd gotten our hints of this mysterious force in the Gamma Quadrant called the Dominion, and now we're finally seeing them. You know, it was interesting, you know, the meeting the Jem'Hadar for the first time, meeting a Vorta and not knowing what they're all about. And we still don't know, like, you know, like she uses some sort of power to disrupt the force field. But do Vortas actually do that? Like, we've never seen any other Vorta do that after this episode. So it's kind of interesting. Like, was that just something they were doing for show, just for Sisko's benefit? Or is that a power that the Vorta actually have? We don't know. When we learn of the founders, we don't know who they are. That they run the Dominion. And I love this episode. I love the Sisko Jake, you know, father son stuff. I love the fact that Nog and Quark go camping with them. Nog's trying to do, you know, be a good student and learn stuff, and Quark's just trying to, you know, pull a fast one over Sisko. I love their dialogues together, like when Quark brings up, you know, like, you know, Sisko and them, they all kind of look down at the Ferengi, and then Quark's like, hey, you know, we didn't have concentration camps. We didn't have world wars. We didn't have interstellar wars. You know, like, you know, we're not like you. We're better. And it really made you think. I was like, oh, you know, he's kind of got a good point there, Quark. And then, yeah, I love the design of the Jem'Hadar. I love the fact, I remember when I initially watched this episode, when it was released, and then they show that shot of a galaxy-class starship docked at Deep Space Nine. I remember jumping out of my chair thinking it was the Enterprise. I was like, holy shit, it's, you know, but then,
yeah.
but it's the USS Odyssey. But, I mean, still cool. Like, I mean, I was like, I was not expecting a galaxy-class starship. And then to see it being destroyed, and I love the design of the Jem'Hadar ships, like, you know, and the fact that, yeah, like, what's the future going to hold now? Where, you know, and I can't remember the Vorta's name, but she just...
Eris.
Yeah, and she just beams away. Like, where the hell did she go? And it seems like, you know, shields don't work against, you know, the Dominion can get past shields, they can beam through shields, you know, like that Jem'Hadar, you know, when they put him in that force field, he just walks through it like it's nothing. And then he tells Kira, you know, like, we, you know, and she asks, where did you get this data pad? And he's like, yeah, we got it from the Bajoran colony on our side of the wormhole. You should be proud. They fought well for a spiritual people. And yeah, like, it's, you know, like, the mic was dropped right there. He beamed away, and life was never the same after this episode. Richard, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Honestly, I friggin' love this episode, and I love the galaxy class of starships. Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't the Enterprise, you know, but, you know, USS Odyssey is still pretty bad, eh? Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show, like, they sent in, at the time, one of their most powerful ships. Like, the Enterprise was pretty much top-notch, not necessarily meant for fighting, but it had, you know, D-Derodax-level weapons and shields and all this cool stuff. And it just got smacked out of existence by, you know, a unit of Jem'Hadar fighters. And just, it showed you like how intent they are. Like, they will do anything. They went for a suicide bombing run after they were retreating. They sent a message, and they sent it hard. The whole telekinetic thing from Eris, I wish they would have done more with that, because that would have been really cool. Again, Jake and Nog interacting, always great to see. I really enjoy that. The whole camping thing was, you know, a little bit of comedy, I guess, and, you know, Quark being Quark, not surprised. And I love the Jem'Hadar. They're fierce badasses. They don't consider anything. Like, they don't think about honor. They think about victory is life. That's it. I love it. And their names, like the one in this episode is Talaktalan, and they have other cool names like Omediclon and all this other stuff. I love that. And it just, in general, fantastic episode. One of my favorites of this season, actually. And then kind of gives a really good wide berth to season 3, and it's just like, yeah, now we're going to get to be more badass.
Quickly, I just wanted to interject. The Captain Keogh of the USS Odyssey was played by Alan Oppenheimer, who also played a Klingon cleric, Koroth, in the episode Rightful Heir in season 6 of Star Trek Next Generation. And also, this is kind of a sad note. I don't know the actor's name. He's not listed here. But he played the first officer on the Odyssey. I can't remember his name. He was a series regular on the TV series The Shield from 2002 to 2009 with Michael Chiklis. He played a cop. He actually is in prison right now. He murdered his wife a few years ago.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, the first officer of the Odyssey, yeah, he's in prison now, unfortunately. All right, Ragnar, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, everything you guys have said so far, yeah, it was a great episode. I did like when they, you know, used Quark's skill set for the good of their cause, you know? I thought that was kind of fun. And I do have a bit of a quibble, though. I think that they, you know, did make the Jem'Hadar and the Vortas more powerful than they were when we meet them again later. Like, they kind of toned them down a little bit. Or either they toned them down or the Federation upgraded all their technology and just didn't tell us about it. But when you first meet them, yeah, they're walking through force fields and like they're so scary. When you meet them again later, they're still scary, but they never were quite as scary as they were in that first, you know, this first episode here.
Yeah, absolutely. That actor I had mentioned, his name is Michael Jace, the one that was on The Shield. He was on episodes of Law and Order. He was also in the film Clear and Present Danger, and he was in Forrest Gump as well, as being the first officer of the USS Odyssey. Curtis, what are your thoughts on this episode, sir?
How do you top the Borg threat? This is how. This is how. These guys, like, the Borg were scary, but the Dominion were scarier. They were, like, individually sentient. They were definitely intimidating. They came off really strong, and I kind of wish they would have stayed that intimidating, but, you know, the Borg got toned down eventually, too. As far as the Vorta telekinesis, I had a bunch of thoughts on that are now, of course, fleeing my mind. I think that as they went on, they developed the species more, kind of like the Trill. The Trill started out as something a little different than what we ended up with as Jadzia.
Yeah.
And as they went on, it doesn't suit the Vorta's purpose within the Dominion to have any sort of offensive capabilities because they have the Jem'Hadar to command. They can't even see that well because they don't need to. And that's how they were made by the founders. So I think that maybe that power was included for Eris as a plot device because we needed to get out of the force field. But I think it was just sort of quietly removed by the writers in later episodes. This is my theory.
Yeah, that or maybe it was staged. Like, maybe Eris staged the whole thing. Like, I mean, she did stage the lock part of it.
True.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They are a devious bunch, those Vorta.
Yep. But, yeah, no,
I love
this,
the Vorta.
This was a fantastic way to end Season 2. Like, we had no idea what was going to happen with Season 3.
They couldn't have done it better.
Yeah, like, this was almost as equivalent to Best of Both Worlds. Like, this was like, okay, where do we go now?
Right.
Yeah, like, it really, you know, and that line at the end when Sisko, when they're talking about, like Kira says, she'll be back, but the question is who she'll bring with her. And then Sisko says, if the Dominion comes through the wormhole, the first battle will be fought here, and I intend to be ready for them. And then that's it. It was like, ooh, shit's got real quick.
How are you intending to be ready for people who just casually strolled through your force field?
Yeah, like, and shot through your shields. Like, yeah, it was definitely impressive.
Absolutely.
All right, so that was Season 2 of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Before we call this an episode, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Ragnar, we'll start with you. Where can we find you, sir?
Well, RagnarTheTrader.com is my website where you can see all of my products that are for sale. And you can get a hold of me there if you have questions about a custom commission. I've put the Klingon Empire logo on many a drinking horn. It's always a favorite one of mine to carve.
Cool.
And I'm also on, you know, all the different social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. So
perfect. Curtis, where can we find you, sir?
At the moment, you still can't. I'm hiding. I am the ninja. However, I have a couple of projects that I am considering right now. And when I have more information, I'll share it with you first.
Excellent. And Richard, where can we find you, sir?
Just Instagram and YouTube, Monk Lifts, nothing special. Another shout out for RagnarTheTrader.com. I just recently purchased a drinking horn and a war call blowing horn. Fantastic products. Always love spending money with Ragnar every time. But I recommend it. The drinking horn is what I drink out of basically every day. I mix every drink and I enjoy every drink I drink out of it every day.
That is excellent. Yeah, they look impressive. I've seen them firsthand, ladies and gentlemen. It's really cool stuff.
Really. Well, thanks, guys.
And as for myself, you can check out my blog at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. And yeah, as I mentioned, we will be doing more episodes of these. We will be going further into Deep Space Nine, and we're obviously going to be doing a Lost episode at some point, and a Babylon 5 episode at some point, and a rewatch of Star Trek Enterprise. So the Star Trek discussion group, or the Deep Space Nine discussion panel, has a lot of work ahead of them. And I think we're all up for the task. But I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This was our Deep Space Nine Season 2 discussion. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.